It's Thursday, December 3rd, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. I want to make a quick announcement about what will be our 420th show, which will be airing on New Year's Eve. That's Thursday, December 31st, but it's going to be a special kind of hybrid podcast slash live show. I'm going to use the facilities of Normal Show Live on Thursday, December 31st from 9 p.m. Pacific till midnight for us to do a live 3-hour daily audio stash over the live.normal.org stream. During that 3 hours, I'll be bringing you the best and worst of 2009 in a segment we call the Stashies or the Stash Awards. We did it last year for 4 topics. We're going to do it for 8 topics this year. And I've got the post online right now, stuck to the top of the blog at stash.normal.org, where you can make your nominations in those 8 different categories I've listed. There's no actual award or prize. It just gives us something to talk about for those 3 hours of our live show. And you won't have to necessarily listen to the show live. I know a lot of people will be going out to New Year's Eve parties and such. So you can download the podcast the next day on New Year's Day and enjoy it over the New Year's weekend, since you'll have the holiday. Also, I want to let you know that there will be no Normal Show Live on Christmas weekend nor on New Year's weekend. So December 26th and January 2nd, there will be no Normal Show Live so I can spend time with my family. Same goes for the podcast. The Daily Audio Stash podcast will not be heard on Christmas Eve the 24th or Christmas Day the 25th or New Year's Day the 31st, other than the live show I mentioned earlier, or New Year's Day, January 1st. So just be aware of that for the programming. Also for that live show, you'll be able to call in on New Year's Eve. And since we're running from 9 p.m. Pacific to midnight, we'll be covering the drop of the ball, so to speak, of New Year's in all 4 of the continental time zones. So when the show goes on, we'll just have dropped the ball in New York City. The next hour will be the Central Time Zone, hour after that Mountain Time Zone, and then we'll end the show as I'm celebrating New Year's here in the Pacific Time Zone. So I hope you'll join us. The phone number is 347-994-1810. And in other great news regarding Normal Show Live, we are installing a 22 megabit corporate high-speed internet at the Oregon Normal Cannabis Cafe, which will now be the new permanent home of Normal Show Live. That's right, we're going to have a live studio audience for the show and taking your calls and, of course, speaking to all the wonderful guests at Normal Show Live. This weekend, we'll be talking to Ryan Tracy, who is the original webmaster at CheechandChong.com, and he'll be talking about the fallout since Live Nation has taken over their tour and ousted him from that website. And then in the second hour, we'll be speaking to Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com, who will talk about the PayPal dropping him in California Normal and other websites that take advertising for legal medical marijuana providers and clinics. So check that out, Normal Show Live this weekend at live.normal.org, coming to you from Oregon Normal's world-famous Cannabis Cafe. Now, coming up on the podcast, we'll begin with your cannabis community calendar, and then we'll take a look at your hemp headlines, including a look back at our friend Bernie Ellis from Tennessee, who is finally settling up his 7-year fight with the federal government over his personal grow of medical marijuana. We take a look at a poll in Colorado showing 2/3 of the public supporting regulated dispensaries. And in Stupid Stoner Stories, we take a look at a man who was caught hunting while high in New York State. Our daily Toker Tunes today bring you Groovin' Thursday, brought to you by JohnDoeRadio.com. And John Doe's got MC Chris with a great song called Wide. And for Cannabis Conversations today, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Julie Holland. She's the author of the New York Times bestseller, Weekends at Bellevue, chronicling her time working at the emergency room for the famous mental health ward there at Bellevue Hospital. She's also been appearing on TV recently defending medical marijuana in a series of so-called stiletto stoner stories on the Today Show. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
There were 765,000 marijuana arrests in 2007. That's not for dealers and kingpins. No, that's just for simple possession. Multiply that by the average cost of each arrest, and what have you got? $7.6 billion spent on people just smoking some pot. That's enough money to buy health insurance for every child that needs it. That's enough cash to adopt every stray dog and enough left over to feed it. Mr. Obama, I kinda wrote this song for you. You got my vote for change. Now let's see what you can do.
Something fat and long. Pack me a boat or fill me a bomb. It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
It's time for your cannabis community calendar, available online at normal.org/calendar. To get your events added to the calendar, send me an email with the subject calendar request to stash@normal.org. Saturday, December 5th, Normal presents the Normal Key West Legal Seminar in Key West, Florida for Saturday and Sunday. Details available at norml.org. Continuing legal education credits are available for attorneys in attendance. Again, more details at normal.org. Also on Saturday, Ohio Normal will be having a holiday party at the Club Lafayette in Lodi. And Normal Show Live is on the air from live.normal.org. From Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe. On Sunday, December 6th, there's a free chili cook-off at Clark Lake, Michigan. Michigan Normal would like you to attend. A patient tent will be provided at the site. Also on Sunday, Jack Cole from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition will be speaking in Kansas City, Missouri at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church, and in the afternoon will be speaking twice at the University of Missouri. For more information, check out kcnormal.org or call 888-KC-Normal. Also, on Sunday, December 6th, Lincoln Normal, Nebraska will be having an open meeting at the Coffee House Panache. Next week on Monday, Kansas City Normal will be having their regular meeting. On Tuesday, December 8th, Joplin Normal will be having their meeting at Blackthorn Pizza and Pub. And on Wednesday, December 9th, Ohio Normal has their open meeting online via PalTalk. For more information on all these events, including contact information, websites, maps, times, dates, and more, check out the Cannabis Community Calendar at norml.org/calendar.
From Washington, D.C., the belly of the anti-marijuana beast, season's greetings from Normal staff and the board of directors to you and yours. This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal and the Normal Foundation, and I sincerely hope your holidays are both safe and hemp-filled.
Hi, this is Normal founder and legal counsel Keith Stropp, wishing you a happy holiday from Normal. Let's use this time with family and friends to rededicate ourselves to ending marijuana prohibition and stopping the arrest of responsible marijuana smokers. Happy holidays.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Tennessee medical marijuana grower Bernie Ellis signs away 25 acres to the federal government. From Nashville Scene. By the time you hear this, Bernie Ellis will be home on the farm he's had for nearly four decades in the Fly community, 12 miles south of Lipers Fork. There'll just be less of it. His farm will be 25 acres smaller, but Ellis is willing to live with that, considering the federal government almost took it all and meant to throw him in prison to boot. Last month, Ellis, a respected public health epidemiologist with a 35-year career, signed civil asset forfeiture papers handing 25 acres of farmland over to the U.S. government. The agreement ends a nightmare that began 7 years ago when he was raided for growing marijuana, a small amount he used only for medicinal purposes and to ease the suffering of the terminally ill. But in prosecuting Ellis, or persecuting him, as his many supporters claim, the government may have given a face to what medical marijuana and cannabis reform activists argue is the fundamental injustice of the drug war. In 2002, drug agents in helicopters and on four-wheelers stormed Ellis's property looking for marijuana plants. To this day, he believes they were tipped off by a local dealer/informant fuming because Ellis wouldn't sell to him. Ellis readily admitted that he was growing small amounts of cannabis to relieve his degenerative spine and hip condition. What's more, he said, he was sharing it free of charge with AIDS and cancer patients to offset their pain and nausea. Ellis faced a battery of charges. Although he still disputes the amount and weight of what the agents found, he pleaded guilty to manufacturing cannabis plants in late 2003 to preempt more severe action. By 2007, he'd lost his livelihood and gone $70,000 in debt. Worst of all, he faced losing the 187 acres of farmland he'd accumulated since 1973. Quote, "If I were a rapist, the government couldn't take my farm," Ellis told the Scene in 2007. "I grew cannabis and provided it free of charge to sick people, so I run the risk of losing everything I own. That just doesn't compute to me." End quote. It didn't compute to a lot of people. To the embarrassment of federal and state drug officials, Ellis came a cause celeb. The court eventually sentenced Ellis to 4 years probation, later reduced to two, a lenient sentence considering he was facing 10 years in prison. During his halfway house stay, Ellis says he learned some valuable truths about the drug war from my homies. The first thing they told him, he recalls, is that they didn't smoke pot. Not because they didn't prefer its mellow buzz, but because it took too long to pass through the body to beat their mandatory drug tests. So they would find something faster. Quote, "Use meth on Friday, piss clean on Monday," end quote, ran a user's credo. Sadly, the issue has become not just personal for Ellis, but perhaps critical. Last month, as his sojourn in legal limbo was finally coming to an end, Bernie Ellis was diagnosed with cancer. How severe, he doesn't know. But the diagnosis only strengthens his conviction that for the seriously ill, marijuana is neither an indulgence nor a vice, but a quality of life necessity. I spoke with Bernie on the June 29th edition of the Daily Audio Stash. While I'm glad his federal troubles are over, I am so saddened by the unnecessary destruction of this man's way of life and further saddened by the tragedy of his cancer diagnosis. Best of luck and health to you, Bernie. We're working overtime to be sure you have the right to medical marijuana in Tennessee. Colorado, nearly two-thirds support regulated medical marijuana dispensaries from trading markets. Coloradans for Medical Marijuana Regulation, a coalition of medical marijuana patients and providers supporting responsible regulation of medical marijuana, today released a statewide poll illustrating that Colorado voters overwhelmingly favor regulating state-licensed dispensaries to serve persons who are suffering from debilitating medical conditions. By a margin of 2-1, 64% of voters said they would approve proposals that would establish state-licensed marijuana dispensaries to cultivate and provide marijuana to patients with doctors' recommendations. Just 32% said they would reject it. The telephone survey of 500 Colorado voters who are likely to participate in the 2010 general election was conducted November 6th through 9th, 2009, using a statistically valid random sample drawn from a current list of registered voters. The sample asked, quote, "This proposal would establish state-licensed marijuana dispensaries to cultivate and provide marijuana to patients with doctors' recommendations, to allow local governments to set limits on the number of dispensaries and to enact zoning regulations applicable to the dispensaries, and to require patients to be registered with the state and set a limit on the amount of marijuana patients can acquire through the dispensary system. If the election were held today, would you vote yes or no on this proposal?" End quote. In California and Colorado, the business of dispensaries is booming, and the state and local governments are now scrambling to cope. As it turns out, the dispensaries are popular with the people, and any problems associated with them aren't because they exist, but because they are unregulated. It's long past time for these legislators to accept the fact that the people support medical marijuana, and that means supporting a safe means of access for the people who need medical marijuana. Dispensaries aren't going anywhere, and in this troubling economy, it behooves the state and the private sector to get a handle on one of the few growth industries, pun intended, we have left.
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Man busted for hunting while high. From LoHUD.com.
A Mahomet man faces charges after a town officer determined that he was hunting while high on marijuana, Carmel Chief Michael Johnson said today. Michael Cassidy, age 47, was arrested around 11:30 a.m. Tuesday after Officer Thomas Johansson saw him carrying a long gun while walking on New York City Department of Environmental Protection property on Washington Road. Johansson stopped to talk with Cassidy because he appeared to be trespassing on New York City land, police said. During the conversation, Johansson could smell a strong odor of marijuana coming from Cassidy's clothes, police said. Cassidy later admitted that he had just smoked a joint and that he had marijuana on his person and in his car, police said. Johansson charged Cassidy with hunting while impaired by drugs, misdemeanor, unlawful possession of marijuana, failure to carry a hunting license, and failure to wear a back tag, violations. Police then turned him over to State Department of Environmental Conservation Police for further charges.
Okay, I'm torn on this one. On the one hand, I can't believe the guy is so stupid as to admit breaking the law to a police officer. So the cop says he smells a strong odor of marijuana coming from your clothes? Great. Not against the law to smell like pot. Tell him you smell the strong odor of Krispy Kreme donuts coming from his uniform. Okay, maybe not. There is a reason the cop shows always show them telling the perp he has a right to remain silent. It's because you have an inalienable right to a heaping dose of shut the fuck up when you're dealing with police. If he smells weed and uses that as a probable cause to search you and finds weed, well, you're just as busted as if you admitted you had weed. However, he may not choose to search you and you're home free. If he searches you after you refused, your attorney may be able to throw out the search in court. And most certainly, keeping your mouth shut prevents him from determining that you are actually high at the moment, because possession doesn't equal impairment. On the other hand, anything that impedes stupid high people with guns can't be all bad. I'm a big supporter of Second Amendment rights and hunting as part of my Idahoan DNA, but I take guns far too seriously to ever be around them and cannabis at the same time. Smoking a joint and going hunting is most certainly not a part of normal's principles of responsible use.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. Normal even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. Normal, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. Normal is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's N-O-R-M-L.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show, accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
John Doe Radio.
John Doe from the John Doe Radio Show, bringing you your Groovin' Thursday tune on the Normal Daily Audio Stash. Nerdcore hip-hop, possibly one of the weirdest names for any genre of music ever to be made up. You would think the definition would entail artists are nerds who rap, but that's not all true. Call an artist like MC Chris a nerdcore rapper, and you're probably going to see the gangsta appear more than the nerd. So we won't put MC in that category. If you're familiar with Adult Swim on the Cartoon Network, you might be familiar with MC Chris's voice and work. He's wrote for and voiced characters for numerous shows on the network, including Aqua Teen, Hunger Force, C-Lab 2021, and one of my all-time favorites, Space Ghost, Coast to Coast. MC Chris has been offered numerous record deals from large and small labels. Most recently, Psychopathic Records, home of ICP, offered MC a spot on the roster, but they've all been denied by the artist as he's chosen to stay independent and has been successful in doing so. And with a song named Weed, it's hard to say MC is not a fan of marijuana, so I'm just not going to say it. MC Chris, one of my favorite artists to play on the John Doe Radio Show, and the more you listen to the catchy tunes and stories, the more I think you're going to dig him. And the more you learn about the artist as a person, the more you see how big of a heart he really has. MC Chris's nephew was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis shortly after he was born. And since that moment, MC learned of the news. He has been fighting to raise awareness and money to conquer the disease. By Christmas of 2008, MC has raised over $25,000 and his goal is the same by Christmas of this year. Enjoy a hard-to-find track, Weed, by MC Chris. I am John Doe and you're grooving on the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Weed is by my side, it's all.
Girl, we're smoking that danger, girl. We're smoking that gender. a friend of mine. Handshake with a prize inside. These are bad, I'm against hallucinogens. These whammies are weaponized. LSD and shrooms, I tried them. Was a time when I wouldn't deny them. All you need's one trip where you lose your shit. Kiss goodbye to the sky with diamonds. But I keep coming back like attacking spack. Cause the weed's like crack cocaine. But the risk that you take is just getting baked. You're surely gonna see the next day. They say we fund Al-Qaeda. Sounds like the government's jealous. Let's get the enemy stone. Bring the ninjas home to help a Christian zealot. Cause all we need is some weed and a laid back beat. Black lights if you stereotype. Couple beanbag chairs and a lack of airs. A marathon of Price is Right. With the 411 for realsies, I'll freeze my Reese's Pieces. It's like every time I pack a fire, my appetite suddenly increases. You know what a crack of bean green leaves. My crack to beam, my dick lights gasoline. Just past the trees while I live that crack of dream. But I'm out of the seas for deep. I might have to take control. Cause I ain't down with a little MC. Growing up in the cloud, I'm a secondhand smoke. Weed is by my side.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations. We're here now for another one of our Cannabis Conversations, and we're joined by the author of the book Weekends at Bellevue, Dr. Julie Holland, MD. And Dr. Holland, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, before we get started too far on this, I have to let you know that my last name is Belville. So as a kid, I was teased mercilessly with the word Bellevue. And funny thing is that I didn't even know what it was representing. But Bellevue Hospital, of course, is in New York, and it's the oldest public hospital in the U.S., like back to the 1700s. Tell folks what it's all about. What's Bellevue Hospital if people, you know, aren't in the New York area and don't know about it?
Well, Bellevue is a huge city hospital, and it treats all sort of illnesses, and it's actually like a level one trauma center. I mean, you ask any cop in Manhattan if they got shot where they want to be taken, they'll tell you Bellevue. But because years and years ago it was an asylum, it's still really linked in people's minds that, you know, Bellevue is sort of where you go when you get crazy. And so what ends up happening is that, you know, because it's sort of in the public consciousness that this is an insane asylum, we end up getting a lot of very sick patients psychiatrically. I mean, you know, we'll have people take buses from Missouri or fly from Egypt and say, you know, I started to hear voices and I thought that I needed to be at Bellevue.
Oh, my.
So what was great for me was that, you know, what I wrote in the book was, you know, I thought I knew what crazy was and then I came to Bellevue. I mean, I had always sought out the sickest, most psychotic patients because I'm very interested in psychosis. And I was always sort of seeking out a high degree of pathology, and it wasn't until I got to Bellevue that I was really satisfied with sort of the level of acuity that I was seeing. So the people there are very sick. I mean, there's a lot. What's great is that it's the biggest psychiatric department in the country. So you have really, really good psychiatrists coming from all over to work there and teach there, and sort of the cream of the crop medical students and residents going there. So they've got a very strong psychiatry department. Great teaching hospital. I really loved being there. So for about 9 years, every Saturday night and Sunday night, I ran the psychiatric emergency room at Bellevue. It was really a dream job for me. It was a lot of fun. And the people that work there are really a lot of fun. Everybody sort of uses humor as a sort of first line defense. So we had fun at work.
You know, I for a brief time in my 20s, I worked as a receptionist at a psychiatric hospital in Idaho, Intermountain Psychiatric. And it was quite an interesting place to work between, you know, working with the staff and then a lot of the patients you would get to know, you know, and 6 days out of seven, they would be perfectly fine, wonderful folks. And then that seventh day, you know, their illness would take a hold of them. It was very fascinating. I can understand why you'd find that fascinating. You know, in our neck of the woods here on this show, we of course talk a lot about marijuana and marijuana policy. And you mentioned having to deal with people with major psychoses. And one of the things we hear a lot from the prohibitionist mindset is that the use of marijuana is going to lead to psychosis and schizophrenia. As someone who's actually worked with people in psychosis and schizophrenia, can you address that topic a bit?
Yeah, well, I'm editing a book right now on cannabis, and I have a whole chapter on that, and it's very complicated. Is, you know, the take-home answer is you're not ever going to have a soundbite that addresses this. It's very complicated. But what I will say about schizophrenia is that schizophrenia is more, you know, a lot of people consider it to be multiple diseases. It's more a syndrome than a specific illness. But even if it were a single illness, it's very much genetically based. 1% of the population worldwide has schizophrenia, and it's a very specific thing. You can't cause schizophrenia by doing anything. I really believe that it's something that you're born with a predisposition where you're going to get it. You know, when you get to be about 19, 20, 21, things start really unraveling and you get sick and you stay sick basically until you die. You can't create or cause schizophrenia. Now, there are plenty of drugs that can make you psychotic. And when you stop using the drug, the psychosis goes away. I mean, say somebody who's on a crack binge or a methamphetamine run where you're using stimulants and dopamine agonists day after day after day and you get psychotic. But when you stop the meth or the cocaine, the psychosis goes away. It's possible that there's some strains of cannabis where because of the THC-CBD ratio, which we should probably talk more about. I mean, there, you know, there's a lot of psychoactive ingredients in this plant. And some of them can trigger anxiety, and some of them can quell anxiety. And some of them can make you paranoid, and some of them can stop you from being paranoid. And so, you know, one of the problems is when you try to create a synthetic cannabinoid, when you take something like Marinol, which is pure THC, as opposed to the plant, some of the things in the plant will sort of work against the THC.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some strains where the CBD, which is cannabidiol, that the ratio with CBD and THC is such that it can make you kind of more paranoid and more self-conscious. And it's possible that it could, in people who are predisposed to getting psychotic, it could make them psychotic. For instance, somebody who is bipolar, there are certain strains of cannabis which can make you a little bit more manic-y or grandiose or mm-hmm. delusional or psychotic or disorganized. For some people, there's some strains that are sort of a destabilizer. And they can add to psychiatric symptoms. And in people who've got a family history of schizophrenia or who are going to end up schizophrenic themselves because they're just genetically predispositioned to that, or the same thing with bipolar, then the cannabis could make it more likely that they're going to have a psychotic episode. So it's really complicated. I mean, there's something called a stress diathesis model, which is the idea that you've got a predisposition to go one way, and then if you push, you know, it's like you're on the edge, and if mm-hmm. something pushes you over the edge, then you're going to have that symptom.
Yeah.
So you could say that some people are sort of more likely they have a diathesis, meaning they would go in that direction anyway.
Yeah.
But the cannabis could be the stress that puts them over the edge. But it's, there's not a lot of very strong data supporting mm-hmm. this.
You know, and as I think about that, and we talk about people might have a predisposition, genetic predisposition to this, I worry that we have such an underreporting and underdiagnosis of a lot of mental health disorders that some people may not even know that they have this in their background.
Right. But you know what happens is somebody gets sick and they go to the hospital and then they start looking back and say, well, what caused this? What were you doing? We see this all the time at Bellevue, where somebody will be bipolar, and they're clearly bipolar, and there's just not much of a question as to what their illness is. But, 2 years ago they took LSD, and they've never been the same since then, so, you know, the parents feel like the LSD caused the illness. It's like, no, the genetics caused the illness, but the LSD pushed them over so that now you could see the illness.
Mm.
So people sort of backtrack and try to start to figure out, and this happens a lot, where you know, a lot of people smoke cannabis.
Yeah.
And some of those people are going to end up with psychiatric symptoms. That doesn't mean that it caused it.
Right.
So, and you'll see this a lot with like the gateway hypothesis, which is just completely garbage. You know, somebody who is shooting up heroin, but they smoke pot before they smoke heroin. Well, they also probably smoke cigarettes and drank alcohol before they smoke pot. So, you know, it doesn't mean that just because somebody did something 2 years ago, it caused their situation now.
Right.
There's correlation.
I always say that the only thing that marijuana and heroin have in common is they're both illegal. The reason they don't call tequila a gateway drug is because they don't sell cocaine next to it.
Yeah.
So we have that. And you know, with regard to the schizophrenia and psychoses, you know, I'm no scientist, but I always just kind of applied a little common sense to it. If there were some link between cannabis and psychoses, wouldn't we have seen a whole lot more psychoses in the 1970s? But maybe that explains bell bottoms.
Well, it's a very good joke, but it's also very true.
Yeah.
That, you know, you would have seen it would be so much more starkly apparent.
Well,
you know, people are looking for connections, and I think if you look hard enough with statistics, you can find just about anything.
Sure. You know, I first discovered you from an appearance that you made on NBC's Today Show that I wanted to address. And this is a month or two ago when the Marie Claire article came out called about the Stiletto Stoners, Stiletto Stoners, the successful professional women. And I was really surprised because in my job, I end up watching a lot of these media presentations. And there's generally a theme. We have generally good cop, bad cop, or good guy, bad guy. There's always two sides to every issue, kind of a fight. And when Matt Lauer came on with you and the woman who was the editor of Marie Claire, she began, and so she was very forthright and positive about our issue. And when the camera turned to you, I said, all right, here it comes. Here comes the reefer madness. Here comes something crazy about marijuana. And to my surprise and delight, you were very sensible about the issue as well. How did you get yourself into this issue of medical marijuana? And as maybe a side note, why do you think we're seeing so much more support among women and this becoming a woman's issue?
So the first question, I mean, I actually came to it very backwards. I edited a book on MDMA, which is better known as the drug ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
MDMA is a Schedule I drug that has tremendous medical potential. It could be very, very useful to the field of psychiatry.
Hmm.
And I've come to realize that cannabis, which is also a Schedule I drug, has tremendous potential to be useful to psychiatry and the rest of medicine. So I come at it from a doctor who is saying, excuse me, these are medicines and they're being treated as illegal drugs. And if we could change the scheduling, you know, the problem, it just makes no sense to me on any level why cannabis is a Schedule I drug. It's saying that there's no medical potential and that it has a high potential for abuse. I mean, that, you know, we could put cigarettes in Schedule I or we could put alcohol in Schedule I, but it doesn't make sense to have cannabis in Schedule I. It makes more sense to have it in Schedule III, which I'm sure you know is what the administrative law judge agreed to back when DEA had that question.
Right.
In terms of women and marijuana, you know, it was interesting after Stiletto Stoners, I got so much email from women saying, you know, like, thank you for telling my story and, you know, thank you for representing me. Way to represent. There's a lot of pot smoking women out there. And, you know, I was on the Today Show again a second time talking about marijuana moms, this idea that, you know, mothers could actually use cannabis. But a lot of women don't like alcohol, don't like the way it feels. Their bodies don't metabolize alcohol very well. They don't appreciate the calories involved. They don't like being hungover. They perhaps know that it's toxic to the brain and the liver. I mean, alcohol is not such a great drug. It's not terribly healthy. And, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that cannabis is healthy, but if you do a head-to-head comparison and look at what's more toxic, what's more dangerous, I mean, any doctor who has got any toxicology training at all has to agree that cannabis is a safer drug than alcohol.
Mm, definitely.
So, you know, I'm a psychiatrist, and there's one thing I know, it's that people want to alter their consciousness. You know, everyday waking consciousness is not where people want to sit 24/7. It's natural to want to alter your consciousness, and it's natural every culture, and many different species besides humans look for ways to alter ourselves. So this is sort of a normal human thing. And, you know, because of our drug laws, everybody thinks it's perfectly normal and okay to use alcohol. But from a medical perspective, it's not necessarily the best way to go. So I think that maybe some women are figuring this out.
Mm, yeah, it looks like it. I mean, we look at the Gallup poll from 2005 and then the Gallup poll from 2009, and while support among men rose by about a percentage point, support among women raised like a whole 10 to 12 points, depending on the margin of error. So there seems to be some sort of revolution going on, and maybe just women have had enough and they're finally, had enough and just going to say something about it. It's a great thing.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that some sort of a tipping point happens eventually. And I do think that the recession is really helpful because it's getting people to talk about taxing, which makes a lot of sense. You know, as a mother and as a physician, I know that if you can regulate something and take it out, you know, right now it's all underground and black market and drug cartels. That doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, if it's regulated, then people will have more control over it, not less. You know, people are so afraid of the cat being out of the bag and things getting out of control, but it's out of control now because it's all underground. So it really, to me, it's safer. It's certainly in terms of, you know, dealers don't card. And I do sort of have worries and caveats about adolescents and kids, being, you know, having more access to cannabis than to other drugs. You know, the brain is still being formed and there's connections still being made and there's the whole issue of pruning in adolescence. And the brain is really very vulnerable in childhood and adolescence. And it's not necessarily the best time to be experimenting in an unsupervised kind of a way. And so if nothing else, when you regulate, it would actually be harder for kids to get cannabis.
Yeah, we see that in survey after survey. I always respond, you know, they say we don't want to make it easier for the kids to get marijuana, and I say the surveys show 85% of them can find it in their high school right now. So,
yeah.
With regard to mental health, I imagine that a lot of people out there that are using the various illicit substances, marijuana included, are doing so as a way of self-medicating for the fact that they don't have the kind of health care coverage that allows for mental health treatment. Do you see legalization of marijuana or regulation of marijuana as a way to start addressing that, maybe turning some of the revenues toward better healthcare treatment, maybe mental health treatment?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends what happens. You know, if it turns out that it's really just medical marijuana as opposed to legalization, then people are going to have to go to a doctor to get, you know, their recommendations. Mm-hmm. And so then they really can be screened for other psychiatric problems and depression and anxiety and, you know, panic panic attacks, all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. You know, there aren't a lot of psychiatrists in the middle of the country. We're mostly at the edges, you know.
Right.
We're mostly on, like New York and L.A. and San Francisco, and it's really hard to find a good psychiatrist or a good psychopharmacologist in the middle of the country.
Sure.
So I don't know how that would necessarily change. But, I mean, I'm certainly, in general, drugs are a public health issue. They should not be a criminal justice issue. It doesn't make any sense to take something as natural as altering yourself and make it a crime. And I certainly don't understand, you know, addiction is a health issue. It's a disease. It's a syndrome of symptoms that need to be treated by a doctor, a psychiatrist, a therapist. It doesn't make any sense to take somebody who is an addict and make them a criminal. And on the other hand, I really hate the idea of somebody plea bargaining and going into treatment as an addict, to get out of going to jail. That doesn't make any sense either. I mean, I don't really like this idea of coerced treatment.
Mm.
But I do think that drug use and alcohol use is a public health issue.
Mm, well
first
put.
And foremost.
Yeah, well put. Definitely. Now, before we let you go, Dr. Julie Holland is the author of Weekends at Bellevue. Tell folks how they can get a hold of that book and give us a little preview of your upcoming cannabis book.
Well, Weekends at Bellevue is, available pretty much in any bookstore or online. Or you can go to weekendsatbellevue.com and there's a link there, I think, to Amazon. But it's everywhere. I made it to number 34 on the New York Times bestseller list, which I was very excited about.
That's wonderful.
The book that I'm editing now is tentatively titled The Pot Book, A Comprehensive Look at the Risks and Benefits of Cannabis. And it's sort of a companion piece to the book I did on MDMA, which is called Ecstasy, The Complete Guide, A Comprehensive Look at the Risks and Benefits of MDMA. So it's looking at it as a recreational drug and the issues of drug policy and public health. And it's also looking at it as a medicine. And there's chapters and sections on using medical marijuana. So it's something that I'm editing with multiple other contributors, which is just like the Ecstasy book I did, where I've got sort of experts from around the world weighing in. And then I'm writing intros and a couple of chapters myself. So it's a nonprofit book. All proceeds will go toward funding clinical medical marijuana research, just like the Ecstasy book was a nonprofit book also.
Well, excellent.
But Weekends at Bellevue is a profit book, so feel free to buy it. Mama needs a new pair of shoes.
That's right. So. Oh, well, thank you so much, Dr. Julie Holland. We appreciate you for being here, and we look forward to seeing you on your next television appearances. You're doing a great job. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how the Today Show really keeps doing these cannabis pieces.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going on with them.
Well, the only sector of business that seems to be having growth right now is the cannabis business, or reporting on it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thanks for talking.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder to get your nominations in for the 2009 Stashies, which we'll be presenting on New Year's Eve at the end of the month. So just go to stash.normal.org. The Stashy nomination post is pinned to the top of the blog. Just go to the comments section and leave your comments for any suggested nominations in the 8 categories that I've listed in the post. Or if you can think of another category that I forgot, add that too. You can help make the Stashies a truly people-driven cannabis award show. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.